The following is a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! Go Cowboys!
This is Talkin' Cowboys. Streaming live from the Dallas Cowboys World Headquarters at the Star in Frisco.
Prescott keeps it, and he bangs it into the touchdown.
And now your hosts, Isaiah Standback, Nick Harris, John Mashoda, and Kyle Yeomans.
It's a Wednesday edition of Talking Cowboys presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company, live from the Star in Frisco, Texas, in the SWBC studios. It is week 16. It's the Cowboys and the Dolphins coming up on Sunday. Christmas Eve matchup 325 this week. The what was that?
Yeah, do that again.
That was it.
No. That's the only one?
Yeah, we got to wait till later in the week.
It didn't feel like it was full blown.
It's not Friday yet, Kyle.
Are you going to do that when you pick the Dolphins on Friday?
Ooh.
I heard a gulp.
It turned into a straight cartoon gulp.
Like, we have a whole week full of studying and
yeah, there's a lot that can happen between now and then.
Absolutely.
Oh, you don't know right now?
No.
I think you do.
I think he knows. I don't know.
Based off of yesterday, it seemed like you're pretty confident.
See, throughout the week, I have a lot of conversations. I talk with the players, the coaches, scouting departments. I have a lot of conversations throughout the week. Watch a lot of film.
Find out if Tyreek Hill is playing or not.
I mean, it really doesn't matter if he plays or not.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, okay. You have already made your decision.
It does matter. It definitely matters. But I'm talking about their approach. Their approach won't change.
Sure.
Yeah.
But having Tyreek Hill
on the field matters.
That matters.
But their strategy against the Cowboys, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's about to be Mr. 2K here in about three weeks.
That's what their goal is.
Yeah.
If he plays, they're going to force feed the crap out of him.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about that today. Yeah. He'll go for 200 yards. He'll try to go for 200 yards against Dallas if he plays.
And that's the thing. You talk about individuals that the Cowboys have played this year. And I don't want to say fear, because you don't necessarily fear anybody, but concern about an individual, focus on an individual.
Can you fear players in this league anymore, as soft as this league has gotten?
Yes.
You can?
Absolutely.
Who would you fear?
I'm not sure about that.
I'd fear Tyreek Hill.
Okay, so you can fear Tyreek.
Absolutely.
I have a high regard for Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, well, if you put some good weapons around him, I would greatly fear Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. Great. Yeah. Okay, that's a good one.
Derrick Henry. I don't want to see Derrick Henry coming down the hill on me.
Not with this defense. Christian McCaffrey?
McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Debo.
He would be up there. You could fear Debo at this point?
Absolutely.
Do you fear anybody on this Cowboys team? CD?
CD.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Micah? I guess from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah. CD and Micah? I think that's fair.
That's probably the two that you fear.
And Brandon Aubrey.
Clearly, you fear Micah Parsons, because if you didn't, you'd be like, nah, we'll just put one guy over there.
Yeah.
We'll just see what happens.
Fear is a strong word.
Go through it.
Like, I just...
Did you ever fear anybody on the field?
Let's talk about the
one time.
Of fear.
One player.
Who?
It was Brian Dawkins.
Only that's
player.
A good one.
I mean, but that's
I find it hard to believe that if you were playing defensive back in the time that you were in the NFL, that you wouldn't have feared Randy Moss.
No. I mean, I didn't play against Randy. I mean, I did play, but I played with Randy.
Saying, no, but I'm saying if you were a defensive back in the league and you had a check
I'm sure
Randy,
there was. Yeah, I mean, when I think about the word fear, I think about physical
enforcement. Yeah, I fear backpedaling and him throwing up
excuse me. I fear, like, fear to me is like,
they can hurt you.
They can hurt you.
Yeah.
Physically hurt you.
Oh.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying, like, for me, like.
Oh, I think there's some fear in getting embarrassed.
Yeah, I see.
You don't want to be
so. If you
want to
talk about just fear, like in terms of like, oh, like he's a scary player, like he can destroy you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
He's probably the only player in this league that I would fear.
I get what you're saying, because when you said about the way the game's changed, so if you're going from a being scared of standpoint, you are right on the defensive side.
Yeah, that's what
how
I'm
much
talking
they've
about.
Taken out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, you had to. There were certain routes. I mean, did you guys see the Tom Brady quote?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In regards to the NFL suspension of the player from Pittsburgh,
he was such a physical player, so I like.
No,
him
no,
he
but he's absolutely correct though. Like he's absolutely correct because I was in those meetings when he would throw a ball and get West blown up, and he was super apologetic, you know, and like.
I just wanted that time when he was playing. Where was that time when he was playing?
I hear you.
Why do we got it
he
now?
Understood it. Now he wanted the benefits of the softness.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, he did.
But
certainly prolonged that career a little bit, didn't it, Tom?
There's no you can't fear. You can't physically fear players anymore. I don't think that is even possible. It's not even like It's not allowed.
Yeah.
Well, what, sure. From like a game plan standpoint, I think is what we're talking about.
Tyreek Hill. Fearing. Tyreek Hill. The only player in the league that I would fear is Tyreek Hill.
You don't fear Patrick Mahomes with weapons?
No. I mean,
with Tyreek Hill.
I respect him. I respect him.
Yeah, right.
With Tyreek Hill.
I respect him. But like in terms of like somebody just completely just tearing down your game plan, it's Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Only player in the league that I say, oh, you know what? This dude doesn't matter what you do. If you double team him, he still runs past your double team. If you play 20 yards off, he still runs past your, you know, he'll run underneath, catch it, and then run past your whole team, that even if they have angles. He's the only person that could literally just tear down whatever it is that you had ready for him.
I would argue Justin Jefferson when he's healthy.
Yeah, that's good.
Cool. I mean, I think he's top two and sometimes not two when he's healthy. So I'd put him in that category as well. And if we're talking running backs, I mean, I feel like there's a good two or three. You got McCaffrey. You got Derrick Henry. Gosh.
I can see you wanting to say Bijan Robinson here. But
no, I'm not.
Hunter Lipke.
Not Bijan just yet, but I think Bijan
Nick Chubb when
there.
He's healthy?
Nick Chubb when he's healthy, yeah. That's a good one. But yeah, I think there's a handful of players.
Literally, there's only a handful. I put Tyreek in that conversation. I put Micah in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And
Miles Garrett? Probably
one of, Miles Garrett is the last one. Yep. Yeah. That's the only three.
What about
one of the Boses?
Nope. I have a high respect for those guys.
Yeah.
But in terms of like, when I think about fearing somebody, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like they physically can. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know, but with the way you're saying it, it makes me think of Aaron Donald, though.
Yeah, Aaron Donald's a beast, but I mean, he's slowing down.
Yeah. In his prime, though, that would be.
Yeah,
wait
absolutely.
A second.
Absolutely.
Wait a second.
He's, by choice. He's slowing down by choice.
We had a conversation leading into the Rams.
No, we did. At that time.
Hold on. I was like, I think he's starting to decline. No, he's not.
No. At that time, he was not. At that time, he's not, but he's chilled out. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not by. It's not by
I'm under
age.
Your game, stand back.
It's not by Adrian. He has literally throttled it down. But we said, what did we say going into that game? He was going to turn it up for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Right? And then that first series, he turned it up for the Cowboys. Right? And then after that, what happened?
I fear him just walking in.
Was that
when
it started? Was that when it started?
No, he throttled down. Yeah.
I'd be scared if he just walked by right now.
Yeah.
He is a guy who can literally just be a game wrecker. And that's what I'm talking about. Like somebody that it doesn't matter physically, you can't stop them.
Yeah,
that's what I think about. Physically, one-on-one, you can't stop Micah Parsons.
No.
Physically, one-on-one, you can't stop Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Physically, one-on-one, Myles Garrett, don't even try it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's just certain guys that are just not of this earth.
Looks like that MVP, I mean, the Defensive Player of the Year race looks like it's going to come down to Micah and Myles Garrett, by the way. Yeah. Just thinking of that real quick. I've checked the odds this morning. And
Myles Garrett is a physical specimen. Like I've seen this dude in the airport before, and I'm like, what is that? You know what I'm saying? He gives me the vibes when I first played against Julius Peppers. I was like, I don't know what that is. Like you weren't that was created. That was not born. There's no way you came out of a womb.
So Tyreek Hill needs to average 153 yards over the course of the next three games to hit 2K. I know that's been a big goal for his and that offense as well. So
and Coach McDaniels loves making his players happy.
Yes. Yeah. So expect him to get his if he plays on Sunday.
All right, let's get into some news and notes. Anything from the Cowboys yesterday?
You know, it was a Tuesday yesterday.
It was a Tuesday.
As Tuesdays go around here, there's not a whole lot to throw around. So I think the big thing today that we're going to be looking at, they return to the practice field in a walkthrough setting. They'll go in a walkthrough later today with it being a travel week, them coming off of a travel week. So it'll be kind of a different day, but they will have a practice estimation as far as injuries go. So a couple of big guys that you'll be looking at is Zach Martin and Malik Hooker, and then obviously Jonathan Hankins. Not expecting Hankins to go this week. I'm not, but we'll see if maybe the practice report gives any confidence. And then also, you got a couple more guys that got banged up in that Buffalo game. Damone Clark will be one to look at to see if he's on the injury report, see if Rico Dowdle is still popping up with that ankle injury as the season goes on. So there'll be quite a bit to look at from that standpoint.
Did see Jonathan Hankins in the building this morning, and he was able to walk around, look good. Looked like he was feeling pretty good. That was just a quick look, though. It wasn't like I sat there and analyzed Jonathan Hankins or anything.
So, hey, man, but, can you prop your ankle up on this table?
Yeah, hey, dude, real quick. I'm finishing my omelet.
You're eating your
put
breakfast
that right there? Yeah, appreciate it. real quick. If you had to put confidence level on guys that you think could miss, what would it be? Just midweek, and we could probably revisit it on Friday.
As far as right now,
Hooker, And then some of those other names that might pop up on the injury report.
I think Hooker plays just because he was so close to playing in Buffalo.
Yeah.
I don't think Hankins plays. I think Zach Martin, I'd put it at like 70% confidence that he does play. So
70% isn't as high as I thought it would be.
Well, we'll see how the practice reports come out this week. And we'll kind of go from there. I mean,
I think you're just going with his number.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you
makes
go.
Sense.
That's exactly good. What I was doing.
I like
he's right over your shoulder. That's the only reason I thought it. Sorry.
Nice.
He's staring at me.
But yeah, I'd give it 70 right now, and we'll see how the week progresses.
Okay. What do you think?
No, I would agree with that. At least today, you know, I don't think Hankins will play either. But at least today, mm-hmm. probably get something from Mike McCarthy on just where he's at there. I think if Hankins doesn't play in this game and doesn't play against Detroit, then why would you play him against Washington?
Yeah.
You would just save him for the playoffs. I think that that's the more
game
likely.
That you can't lose.
Yeah, what's that?
It's the only game that you can't afford to lose.
Yeah.
What's that?
Probably the only game that you can win without him.
Yeah, that's what I meant, like more so.
That's what I'm saying. Look at there.
Yeah. So I don't feel very confident in Hankins at all, but I do think Zach Martin and Malik Hooker will play in this game.
Okay.
I'm also interested to see if CeeDee Lamb shows up on the injury report. He just took some hits, was limping around a little bit during the game, and maybe he's fine, but there was just a couple of times where I was like, man, He got lit up a little bit there, you know.
I'll tell you that post corner that was completed on like a 3rd and 7 from Dak. It was 2nd or 3rd offensive drive. It was like, okay, they're starting to build some offensive momentum here. And he took that lick from, I think it was Jordan Poyer that got him like right in the back.
Yeah.
And gosh, I didn't think he'd pop up from that and immediately popped up. Looked
I
good,
can't so. Think of another player his size or smaller that takes like bigger hits and then just kind of keeps rolling. Like you'd think, he's going to probably get up slow from that one and just – He plays bigger than his size. I think he's even made jokes about him and Dak joking around about, like, you know, you're trying to play like you're, you know, 15 pounds heavier than what you are. But he does, man. And he was like that, you know, at Oklahoma, too, where, you know, he's a more physical than I think you give him credit for just seeing him when he comes out on the field. So I'm not saying he's going to, you know, be missing games or anything like that. I'm wondering if he showed up on the injury report at all.
Devontae Smith took some hits like that at Alabama. And it was, I think that's part of what made his Heisman season so special is that he would just get tagged and then the very next play would get 30 more yards. Yeah. You're just like, all right.
Both of those guys, whenever they were coming out in terms of draft coverage, one of the funny comparisons that they make with these long, lanky receivers is that they're built like Gumby. And you have the Gumby build. I think CeeDee Lamb bends like Gumby too, because whenever he does take a hit, it almost looks like it never phases him. And that's why I'm interested too, John, because you brought up how he was limping around and there was maybe a physical look to it against Buffalo. You don't see that a whole lot from CeeDee. Even if he does get tagged, he gets hit pretty hard. He's going to be right back up and in the huddle, and he's jogging back. He's got his little CD jog where he's got his arms in tight, and he kind of runs back to the huddle. Yeah, I think he's as flexible and as durable as any receiver that we've seen in a Cowboys uniform, at least early in his career. I don't know if that'll continue as you continue on in your NFL tenure, because you're going to take some big hits along the way. But do you think Micah Parsons shows up on the injury report from the knee? Maybe a bit of a hyperextension there from when Marquise Bell threw a Bills player on top of the knee?
I don't think so, at least.
He was able to play the rest of the game.
Yeah, he was able to finish the game, and I didn't see him limping around or anything in the locker room.
That's
so
good.
I believe he was even asked about it, and he didn't pay it much attention. So
good.
The only one I'm really looking at is Damone Clark. Unless I'm forgetting one off the top of my head, but that's the only one I'm really taking a look at right now. I know Curse went down at one point, but he stayed in the game, so maybe take a look at Curse as well. But Clark and Curse, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, two good ones to keep an eye on going into practice today. Is it a morning practice?
It'll be a walkthrough in the afternoon, about 4:15.
Got it. Yeah. Sounds good. All right, we'll give you updates on that tomorrow when we come back here on Talking Cowboys. It's a Wednesday, so we're previewing the Dallas defensive preview against this Miami Dolphins offense. Give me one name, Isaiah, that we're going to focus on in this next segment.
Tua.
Okay, I was going to say that wasn't Tyreek Hill, so that works out well. When we come back here on Talking Cowboys.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savannah. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
Black Rifle Coffee Company serves premium coffee to people who love America. When you drink Black Rifle Coffee, you are directly supporting veterans, law enforcement, and first responders in your community. Black Rifle's expert roasters love coffee almost as much as Texas loves football, so it makes sense that America's Coffee partnered with America's team. Go online at blackriflecoffee.com and fuel up with the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. That's blackriflecoffee.com to fuel up today.
Cowboys fans, after that move, we've just coined the term Rowdy Replay. Let's roll back the tape.
Okay, there's our mascot Rowdy cheering on the boys, and now he's on his phone on his Bank of America mobile banking app?
Staying on top of his finances with his virtual financial assistant, Erica.
Bank of America's digital tools are so impressive. Cowboys fans just can't stop banking. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/can't stop banking.
Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome back into Dear Doctor, the show where I answer life's questions with an ice-cold can of Dr. Pepper. Sheila, let's hear from our next caller, would you?
Dear Doctor, my friend supported me during a tough time, but what's the right gift that says, thanks for being a shoulder to cry on?
Okay, this one's easy. I say, give her a delicious Dr. Pepper. Nothing says, thanks, girl, better than a one-of-a-kind soda. Yes, any Dr. Pepper flavor will do. Now, just a reminder that I don't need to be a real doctor to know that Dr. Pepper is the one you deserve.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Back to Talking Cowboys.
Back here on Talking Cowboys, presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company. This portion of the show is brought to you by Quaker Oats, a super trusted superfood. Quaker Oats, the official oatmeal sponsor of the Dallas Cowboys. Did you get it in this morning, Isaiah?
I sure did.
Thank goodness. We needed it. The laugh at the end.
Nobody is more excited about breakfast than this man right here.
You gotta have it.
It is true.
I was not always that way, Jay.
When you played, you weren't?
Here we go.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I didn't even take vitamins.
Okay.
Because I was scared to get hit, you know, for stimulants.
Oh, I've seen those things up in the locker room that lists everything, and there's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot
there.
Of crap, bro. Yeah. It's like, even if it's protected, you're not protected, so.
Yeah.
And for the longest, bro, it wasn't until, I think, my fourth year in the league, I started taking vitamins. But nutrition, man, is everything now. Wish I would have known.
There you go. Glad you finally figured it out, Isaiah.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks. Goodness. Notes. After you made it to the NFL, got drafted.
I figured it out
had
halfway
a great
through.
College career.
Halfway through my career, after
and
a couple
you
surgeries.
Figured it out.
After my seventh surgery, I figured it out.
Oh, good.
Yep.
When you were playing, what would you say was the percentage of guys on their team that were really focused on that type of stuff?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I can still eat fast food all the time.
Time I got to probably by my third year, there's a lot of guys who were here in Dallas, not many.
Yeah.
When I got to New England, obviously you got, you know, TB12 and guys of that nature. But then when I got to New York, it was to a whole nother level. There's guys that I played with in New York who literally were taking injectable vitamins.
Mm.
And to this day, they live and die by it.
Hmm.
The guys who have retired and they still, like, they order from medical doctors.
Like a needle one.
Yes. They get vials of straight.
I'm not going to make the joke.
Vitamins. And them cats is giving each other, giving themselves injections in a locker room. And it was straight vitamins. But, like, they had blood work done multiple times throughout the year. The Giants would do blood work multiple times throughout the year, give you your reports to see where you're deficient at. Like, they did things the right way. And that's why it gave guys the information needed to take care of themselves the way that they could. So that was pretty dope about that organization at that time.
Not going to lie, whenever I did a Quaker Oats read, I didn't think this is where that conversation would end up. But
life,
I'm glad it did.
Life comes at you fast, Kyle.
Yeah, you get to learn some stuff. Let's learn some stuff about this Miami offense and what they have.
Fang.
Speed, right? Speed, 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 speed. Speed.
It's a good movie, by the way.
What?
Speed.
Speed?
Yeah.
I was thinking, that's a good one. All right. Cowboys allowed 266 rushing yards this past Sunday.
Hmm.
How worried should they be about a relapse here in week 16?
Very.
The guy who calls the plays and the guy who just happens to be the head coach of the team is the same guy who ran the ball on you some years back.
Double M?
Yeah.
You got Mike McCarthy versus Mike McDaniel. Yep. It's the double M battles.
Eminem. And he's
the Mike Mick battle.
Yeah. I think they need to be worried about it. And mainly because of the fact, I think the second level defenders, it includes the linebackers and the safeties that drop down into the box for the Dallas Cowboys, they have not been playing instinctively, meaning that they haven't been decisive in shooting their gaps or filling the voids in running lanes. They've been a little bit hesitant, and this is not a game, obviously, especially coming off the Buffalo game. You've put some things on film early in the year. You affirmed those things in this most recent week. This is not a game to hesitate in your willingness to go make a play. I'm not saying that they don't want to make a play, obviously, but you can't hesitate. You gotta, if you're going to be wrong at 100 miles per hour and live with it and get better from it and get coached from it. But you can't get caught in between. Should I hit this? Should I not? Should I go this way? Should I not? Like, players play off of each other. In this game, with this speed, if you thought, you know, Cook was fast, these guys are faster. And there's multiple guys that they use, not only just the two running backs that they're rotating through, but they also will utilize their receivers around the Barack as well for the end of rounds and things of that nature. So secondary, second-level defenders, you guys are going to have to be aggressive, be decisive, and want to enforce your will. Otherwise, it's going to turn into a doggone circus out there.
What would you say about their offensive line? And the only reason why I say that is because if you watch, you know, the All-22 of just the Cowboys, there's plays that have happened this season. The one that comes to mind for me is the Jalen Carter fumble return for a touchdown on Dak, where, man, if it's just 1 second longer, boom, touchdown. And you can have guys running open, but if your offensive line isn't to that level, that it won't matter as much because Tua's going to be in duress. He might not see it, or he might be getting taken down. Like, how do you think that this offensive line will stack up against, I guess, the pass rush of the Dallas Cowboys?
I think if they try to hold the ball, they're going to run into some problems. Because I think, you know, Dallas obviously, I think they lead the league in pressures. They're going to give most teams some issues in that regard. But they do such a great job, especially Tua, of getting the ball out. I mean, he gets the ball out probably quicker than anybody outside of Dak. And he's able to do that because you don't, as much as they have the ability to push the ball down the field, they don't have to push the ball down the field. He can get Tyreek Hill, he can get Waddle, he can get any of those guys the ball in their hands, you know, at the line of scrimmage, you know, on a bubble screen, and it turns into a first down. Or you can get it to them on a quick slant. And, or even if you're playing cover two and you're playing five guys underneath, I can't tell you how many clips I've already chopped up of them playing teams playing cover two, safe defense against these guys,
yeah,
covering underneath and covering over the top, and Tua's getting the ball out when Tyreek Hill is literally coming up on the linebacker who's 5 yards down the field, and he's throwing it into the cover two hole between the linebacker and the safety. The ball's already out. So your ability to get to Tua by the time that Tyreek Hill runs 6 yards, slim.
That's a lot of trust from a quarterback standpoint, though.
It's a ton of trust, but they under him, obviously, Mike McDaniels, he's done a great job of showing his guys what your responsibilities are. So the complementary players that are around Waddle and Tyreek Hill, I'm going to keep saying those names because obviously those are their biggest threats. The complementary players around them understand these are the coverages that teams are going to play against us, and these are my responsibilities to try to pull coverage away from our primary players. So if I know that your responsibility is a hook drop, then I am going to run my route specifically into that area to make you drive down on that. And if you don't, then I'll get the ball, right? But they literally are just running guys into zones to take guys away from responsibilities and then freeing up Waddle and Tyreek Hill. And it's not complicated football. And once you get it, you know, like, first of all, teams aren't going to play man against us. And if they do, good luck, right, in terms of speaking from Miami.
Yeah.
So whenever teams go too high, there's only so many coverages. And based upon those coverages, I'm going to run my route to challenge your responsibilities. And as long as I do my job and I know what your job is supposed to be in this coverage, then we win.
Yeah.
And at that point, it just comes down to timing. If Tua holds the ball, he finds himself in trouble. If he gets the ball out on time, Most of the time, it's the opposing team that's going to be in trouble because of their ability to run the ball after they catch it.
I'm curious to see what they rely upon in this game. Do they rely upon the pass or do they rely upon the run? Because you look at their weapons in both of those areas, and you look at their offensive line. They got some injuries up front. Mm-hmm. Where do they try to find success? For me, if I'm attacking this Dallas defense without Jonathan Hankins on Sunday afternoon, I'm attacking the edges. I'm trying to get Devon Achane and or Achane, I guess that's how I'm gonna have to get used to that. Raheem Mostert.
It's Achane. He changed it earlier in the year. It was Achane initially. The NFL put out their whole pronunciation guide. It was a whole thing during the draft, and then he went off for like 200 yards in a game this year, and he's like, oh yeah, by the way, my name is pronounced Achane.
And I've known this kid since he was like a sophomore in high school. And I was like, you couldn't have told me this like 7 years ago.
Well, that's my thought is like, you went through the recruiting process, then went to Texas A&M.
Always been Achane.
Then went, got drafted, and it was Achane the entire way. Anyway, and then, by the way, he has one big game in the NFL.
C-H-Chan.
So it's A, like letter A.
Like Jackie Chan.
And Jackie then Chan.
Got you.
C-H-A-N.
It's like Jackie Chan, but just A-Chan.
Yep, A-Chan. There you go. Continue.
If I'm Miami, I'm attacking the edges with those two guys and trying to get them out in space and letting them cook. Because like both of those guys, they're track stars. Literally, both of them come from track backgrounds. Ran track in college, and there's a reason that this is the fastest team in the NFL and potentially the fastest team in NFL history. Yeah. It's because of those two guys. And Tyreek Hill, of course.
Going into this game, and then going into the previous game, do these backs scare you more than Cook?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Just because I looked at what Cook could do outside the edges when he was breaking contain. And he's not as fast as these guys. And he's a quick back, but he's more physical, you know. But these guys, if you give them a sliver of a hole, they're gone. And we've seen that a few times this season. So,
and that's why the whole line doesn't have to be amazing. That's the thing. Like, their O-line doesn't have to be world beaters because of that. If they can create a crack, then them guys are going to turn it into a doggone ravine. You know, like, it's just they don't have to be world beaters up front in order to give their guys opportunities.
With that being said, I want to hear all of your guesses. If you had to rank – if you had to guess where Miami ranks in terms of pressure rate allowed without looking at it, where would they be in the NFL? Would they be middle of the road? Would they be above average, below average? I mean, where would they be pressure out of the 32 allowed? Teams? Yeah, in terms of offensive line, pressure rate allowed, where would they be?
I'd put this is just like a dart. I'd put them like eighth.
Okay. That seems like a possibility.
I would say just because they're getting the ball out quick, they're probably pretty high.
Okay. So allowed or pressure rate allowed? So, amount of times the quarterback is pressured, Tua is pressured.
Yeah, I don't think he's pressured that much.
So,
I don't know, top 10 in the league?
They're number one.
Yeah.
They are the top team in the NFL in terms of pressure rate allowed. They only allow pressure on 26% of the snaps.
Okay, that's okay.
So, they are number one.
None of these numbers that I've heard and everything that I've seen gives me confidence.
You want me to run through them? Let's run through them. All right. They're number two in terms of average pass EPA, of course, expected EPA. Then you've got, what does EPA stand for again? I always forget what it's
expected pass air yards, I think.
Yeah, it's something like that. I don't even know. I got to go back and look at it. Pistol percentage, second. Play action percentage, second. Shift and motion percentage, first.
Yep.
Pressure rate, first. And then two running back sets, they are second in the NFL.
And that's only because they didn't have Achane for 8 weeks or however long it was. They would easily.
Hey, they had Jeff Wilson, Domi Green.
Yeah,
and that plays to what I was just talking about in terms of McDaniels and how he's educating his offensive weapons, his skill position players. They do all that motion not because it's fun to do, not because it looks cool. They're doing that to gain information. Like, they're literally doing that not only for the offensive coordinator to gain information, but the players are digesting information. Every time they shift, every time they move, they're looking at how you adjust to it. And based upon what you adjust to or how you adjust to it, they now know what your responsibilities are.
Expected points added, by the way. That's EPA.
There you go.
Okay.
I always forget what
But he also got to factor in a little bit here, too, of the teams that they've played. Like, how many teams have they played that really have what you would think is, like, a really excellent pass rush? I mean, this team isn't undefeated. They have lost games, you know? And the thing I go back to is the way that they – I think the most notable win of this entire NFL season, for me, is probably them beating Denver 70-20 just because you don't see games like that, you know? And then the next week, they did very similar to what the Cowboys did in Buffalo. I mean, 48-20, you know? So there's just something about this team where on paper I do, they are scary, but there is, I mean, you still got to go out there and play the game, absolutely, you know, and they're, and they have lost games and they have, I mean, I don't know.
Do you think that you think that Denver game was personal for them?
Yes.
Well, yeah, if you're going to score 70 points on somebody, you're...
Why do you think it was personal?
Sean Payton, because he was talking mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and Mike McDaniel's from Denver, and he applied to be a Denver coach. He was a ball boy there, and they didn't give him an opportunity. He applied for an internship after he was a ball boy. They said no, didn't call him back, and then there's like a whole scenario there.
Do you think there's any personal grudges in this game?
Not that I can think of other than Cedric Wilson.
I would say Cedric Wilson.
I do. 200-yard game,
again, I don't think. All right, what's yours? I have one. What's yours?
VF.
I was
Vic Fangio.
Okay, I would think Mike McCarthy towards him more than the other way around.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that was the one I was going to say.
You talk about like cornerstone wins and how 70-20 was a cornerstone win of 2023. That's that Denver game, that 30-16. They scored two touchdowns late to try and make it close, where it was 30-0 at AT&T Stadium. That one, for some reason, sticks in my head too.
When Mike
and
McCarthy,
I know it sticks in Mike's head.
Yeah, when Mike McCarthy, I didn't know this at the time. I looked this up the other day. When Mike McCarthy was in Green Bay and Vic Fangio was in Chicago, their two teams played each other, and when they had those roles, seven times.
Wow.
And Green Bay was 6-1. And so part of me thinks that when Vic said that after the game, that that was Mike being like, oh, okay, yeah, you got us all figured out type thing like that, you know. And he's not going to say that, you know, publicly, but I'm sure that it's something that, you know, especially with – there's a difference between that game against Denver where you're the head coach but you're not calling plays to now you're the one calling the plays. So that's the one – that I was thinking of, but I didn't know if there was anything else that you were thinking of. Like,
I'm thinking about Fangio,
like, did Mike McDaniel try and work for the Cowboys as a ball boy? Like, do we need to factor this in?
I like that, though. I like Fangio versus McCarthy as a talking point, because that's something that you don't necessarily get a chance to think about. We'll talk about it more tomorrow whenever we're previewing offense.
I think it's
defense.
A real thing, though.
It totally is a real thing, especially after that 30-16 and what that ended up looking like. And then,
what about the cheetah versus the lion? Those talks started early in the season.
Yeah.
I think they're friends, though.
I think so, too. I think so, too. I don't think that's real beef, but I just think, you know, just quarterly, I think it's fun.
He's always got Tyreek's jersey as one of them that's up behind
Michael
him.
Michael loves Tyreek.
Yeah, they're.
I think, I think they're really cool. I think they have fun.
Probably play Madden.
But
you're not concerned at all with this ankle injury at all?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
There was a report yesterday that if he were to play, it would be in limited snaps. Do you believe a second of that?
No.
I don't either.
No, he is in a pursuit for 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
They are going to force feed him as long as it doesn't take them out their game plan, you know, and out a potential of winning a ball game. They are going to force feed Tyreek Hill the ball.
So who do you put on him?
did you hear the gulp that time?
I don't know how you stop him. I truly don't. I still have more homework to do in terms of teams that were successful against him. I have to figure out what the commonality was there.
It's not a whole lot of them.
But from what I've seen on film, I don't know how you stop them because of how they're scheming it up for him to get free.
From what I know, it's disguised coverages, and it's coming from Tua not being able to get the ball to him.
Okay.
That's what I see.
Okay, that's what I've seen as well, because I'm literally looking at every single catch that Tyreek has had all year. That's what I'm currently in the process of doing.
It's going to take you all week.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah, I'm having fun. But I'm looking at it in terms of how teams are trying to stop him. Like, what are the coverages that they're running? A lot of teams are trying to run cover two. Hardly anybody's running single high. Okay, whenever you run single high coverage against him and you run, obviously not man, okay, that's dumb. But if you try to run cover three against him, he's running an over route. And he's getting over the top of you, over the top of your coverage, your second level to coverage, and he's beating you across the field. If you try to run two high safeties, it's crazy how fast this ball comes out versus two high. Most times you try to sit back and hold the ball and try to wait for a little hole in cover two. Mm-mm. These guys are getting the ball out, win him 5 yards down the field. He's literally catching the ball, setting his feet, and they're pulling out those linebackers. They're pulling out those corners that are sitting in those responsibilities underneath coverage, and they're driving the ball to him. And he's catching it right behind the linebacker. And time after time, linebackers are jumping up, trying to swat the ball down. And it's just, when it's on time, it's boom, it's in his hand. And now he can see both safeties. And he does what he does.
So his best game this year was probably in their opener against the Chargers. Mm-hmm. He was targeted 15 times. He had 11 catches for 215 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, just monster game.
It was his worst game.
They beat the Chargers by 2 points. So I'm just saying that, like, he can still go off and they can still that doesn't mean they're going to win.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. As long as it doesn't take them out of their potential of winning the ball game, out of their element, out of their game plan, then they're going to try to force feed them. But let's not. We have to remember that as much as they can just give Tyreek the ball, you still have a Waddle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't forget about that dude on Mostert, the other side. Yeah, and then you have Mostert that can catch the ball as well, right? Gesicki obviously was a respectable tight end, but they can turn around and hand the ball off. And you talk about how high they're rated in terms of play action. If you have to respect their run and you have to come downhill, but you still have to sit over the top of the over the receivers, like that is why they're successful.
His worst game is probably the last one. I mean, he had 61 yards on 4 catches. 25 of it came on one play.
You're talking about the one where he sprained his ankle, left the game, came back in?
That's probably the lowest, because the other one would have to be probably the very next game after the Chargers. They played the Patriots, and he had 40 yards and a touchdown, but for him, that's not.
You got the Buffalo game, 3 receptions for 58
yards.
That's the
one I was looking at, too. Yeah. I've got 3 games here. So you were talking about teams that have shut him down.
Yes.
There's only 3 games this year where he hasn't had either 100 yards or a touchdown. And it's the Tennessee game where he was injured, like John's talking about, had the 61 yards, no touchdowns. Kansas City, he had 62 yards on 8 receptions, so they kind of kept him underneath.
And they're halfway across the world, touchdown. Too. You got to factor that one in.
Yeah, that's fair. That was across the pond, wasn't it? And then they had the Buffalo game. So those are the 3 games where they shut him down. And, I mean, shut him down. They limited him to under 100 yards and didn't have him find the end zone. They're 0-3 in those games. So if you find a way to shut him down, you keep him limited, you've got a chance, even with those other weapons, to win the ball game. But that's easier said than done.
Facts.
Of what Tyreek Hill's able to do. All right, when we come back here on Talking Cowboys, it's time for some national storylines. Plus, we're going to revisit a topic we talked about yesterday. Which colleges have had the most success with the Dallas Cowboys as players, or providing players for this roster? When we come back with more Talking Cowboys after this.
They say champions are remembered, but legends are never forgotten. United Ag and Turf offers a winning lineup of John Deere equipment built to tackle any challenge on and off the field. Legendary John Deere tractors, combines, residential mowers, commercial mowers, compact construction equipment, Gator utility vehicles, and a full line of golf and sports turf equipment. United Ag and Turf, the official Ag and Turf equipment supplier of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit unitedagandturf.com to find a location near you.
Are you ready to take coffee off your grocery list forever? Black Rifle Coffee Club is here to help. As a coffee club member, you'll get your favorite coffees roasted, packaged, and shipped to your door free of charge on your preferred schedule. Set it, forget it, and never run low on coffee again. Members also get exclusive deals on coffee, products, and discounts from partner brands. Ease your mind and let Black Rifle worry about your coffee supply. Go to blackriflecoffee.com to join the coffee club today.
It's the official men's skincare brand of the Dallas Cowboys, Jack Black. And right now, Cowboys fans can get 15% off their $75 order. Plus, because every deal needs a playmaker, your order will include a free 5-piece skincare set and free shipping. The Jack Black Playmaker is 4 of Jack's favorites and a full-sized intense therapy lip balm. Make a play for the playmaker at getjackblack.com/cowboys with the code COWBOYSVIP. That's getjackblack.com. Jackblack.com/cowboys with the code COWBOYSVIP.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savanna. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back to Talking Cowboys.
Back here on Talking Cowboys, presented by Black Rifle Coffee Company. This portion of the show is brought to you by Invisalign, the official smile of the Dallas Cowboys. Back here with Isaiah Stanback, John Machota, Nick Harris, Chris Beam in the back. I'm Kyle Yeomans. John, it's time for some national storylines.
Yeah, I wanted to start by revisiting something we talked about yesterday when we were talking about Michigan not having a lot of success recently with the Dallas Cowboys in terms of players being drafted.
Let's hope that turns around. We've got two guys that we're kind of counting on right now.
Right. So I wanted to go back and look and go, because that turned into us talking, okay, well, what school has had probably the most success with the Cowboys? And so in terms of draft picks, Tennessee and UCLA have both had the most drafted by the Cowboys, 17 each. Or that's the most for the Cowboys from any one school, Tennessee and UCLA.
Name the best Tennessee player Dallas has ever had.
Got to be Witten.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and that's... UCLA would probably be Troy Aikman.
Yeah.
So then next would be Florida at 16, so Chaz Green. I couldn't go past that. I'm a Florida State guy, sorry. Emmitt Smith, obviously, there. But third at 15th is Oklahoma. And I would say Oklahoma is probably the one with the most success.
So
the
reason, Troy Aikman.
Because, yeah, Aikman did play there for 2 years. Yeah. So that's part of it. CeeDee Lamb right now.
Yeah.
DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco.
Roy Williams. Hmm. And then Ralph Neely, who was an offensive tackle for them in the 60s, was on the all-decade team in the 60s. So I would say Oklahoma's probably been the one that they've had the most success with. Of all schools, but there's clearly not, like, if you look at the Cowboys, like, top whatever you'd say 30 40 players of all time, there's like almost no overlap with anyone going to the same school, because there, I mean, let's be honest, when Gil Pratt was finding a lot of these guys, it was a lot of small school stuff. Yeah. Where yeah. You know, so anyway, but I just wanted to clear that up because I wanted to look back because it had me thinking. Storylines two that stand out with me right off the top: Matt Patricia taking over as the DC for the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, when I look at things like this, when they happen, I always look at it as from a reporter covering a team. And I just think of, how would it be if this happened with the Cowboys? And so I want to get your guys' take on it. To me, it seems like a little bit of a panic move that they're doing this, that they went from Sean Desai to now Matt Patricia as the one calling the defense for them. And with your answer, factor in what it would be like in week 15 if it was Mike McCarthy giving play calling to Brian Schottenheimer, and how that would be received in the Cowboys world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Do you think it would play an impact?
You don't think that looks bad? Like, that looks like, hey, we're scrambling right now?
That was my first thought, was scramble, whenever they made that move.
Yeah, but I'm not in those meetings to know, like, who's feeding ideas, who's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, it's kind of hard to say from the outside.
Yeah, but perception is kind of reality in these situations.
From the outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we're talking about here. Like, that's what I'm saying. Perception is reality in this instance.
Internally.
And, like, the perception is that they're scrambling. They're getting an offensive guy to call defensive plays. And, like you said, in week 15, it looks weird. It looks weird. That I would see it more as, like, gosh, I don't know. If, like, Robert Prince all of a sudden was calling coverages, you know? It's just like, that'd be goofy. You know, it's goofy. It's a little goofy.
It is the Philadelphia coaching staff.
We'll just do it. We'll use the Cowboys. We'll do the same side of the ball. So all of a sudden they come out week 15. Dan Quinn's not calling the defense anymore. We're just going to go, hey, man, that's fine.
No, not a big deal.
That literally would be all we would talk about. Yeah. That would be all that would be talked about nationally.
Yeah.
No, it's not that big of a deal. Everything's fine here. And then also, by the way, after that happens, then again,
he'll lose
another game.
Do you think Patricia, just being the name that he is, former head coach, he's kind of bounced around the league a little bit and been successful as a coordinator in other places, do you think that's a reason why they say, it's not a big deal, and they're able to kind of rely on it? Do you think that plays a factor?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you factor in the experience, if it was a nobody, it would be a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like, okay, who's this offensive guy calling defensive plays? I guess there's a lot of validity in that. And he's got the Bill Belichick background. I mean, he's got the strongest tree you can be a part of, I think, in the NFL.
I'm just waiting for Isaiah to get a call.
Well, from your perspective, Isaiah, do you think a move like that is made without at least some players speaking up and saying, something needs to change here?
Yeah.
Or do you think that just simply the coaches are just like, they're in their coaching meetings and Nick Sirianni goes, something has to change. Matt, you're calling the defense now. Because I took it as, there's probably been some players that are pretty frustrated and are like, something has to change. We have to do something. Or do you think it's just a coaching thing?
I don't think players are speaking up like that anymore. It's not allowed. Yeah, it's been discouraged, man. I mean, it's been proven.
I feel like
it's been
players speak up about that stuff quite often.
Where?
All over the media. I mean, look at Micah Parsons. I don't even think he's been the roughest extent of it, but he speaks up over anything he wants to talk about. I think the players have just as much of a voice now as they ever have in the league, especially with their own coaching staffs.
Yeah. I don't know. I think obviously on the social media platforms, things like that, but internally I don't see it being – everything's on eggshells now. Everything's on the players are coddled nowadays, and coaches are – I don't know, man.
This is a good
generation.
Segue to my second story. Mm-hmm. There's no coddling going on with this one. So, again, I like comparing this stuff to how it would be if with the Cowboys. Can you imagine late in that game we'll use – oh, I don't know. Let's say this week against Buffalo – did the cameras catch Mike McCarthy just screaming at Dak on the sidelines the way that Sean Payton was screaming at Russell Wilson? Mm. Because it made me think of that because the way you say it doesn't happen as much anymore. And when I saw that, that's what I thought of. Is I was like, man, you really don't see that anymore, especially from a proven franchise quarterback and a proven head coach in this league. Yeah. So I don't know. What did you guys think about that? And how do you guys think that would be received in Dallas?
If it was happening in Dallas, there's a lot that would be talked about.
We saw the Trayvon, talking a little mess to Dak during training camp. How big that got. You can only imagine if it was week 15 and it was McCarthy. Sure.
Somebody tweeted about that this week, and they were like, this is why Trayvon wanted to fight Dak at training camp. I'm like, that's not how that happened, guys. Like, well,
first off, there's
is.
A lot of fallacies in there.
Yeah, there was a lot wrong. That was exactly that's exactly why Trayvon wanted to fight Dak, but like people are still bringing it up, whether it's wrong or not. But you're right, like that was player to player trash talk. That was just competition at its finest. You take a head coach talking to a franchise quarterback in the most visible sports organization in the world, it would blow up. It would be an absolute massive story, probably more than it needs to be, but it would be a completely different.
I don't disagree that it would be a big story and it's probably talked about, but like if he was being held accountable, then what's wrong with it? I don't care. Like that's people are put on pedestals too often.
Yeah,
way too often. That's the one thing that I really appreciated about my time in New England, Coach Belichick. He didn't give a dog on who you were.
Yeah,
everybody was held accountable, held to the same standard. I'm not gonna not curse you out because of who you are to the team. Like, no, absolutely, you're gonna get the same work the way everybody else gets coached. Yeah. Like, there's a standard here. And like just because you're in that position doesn't mean that I'm going to approach you differently to the team because everybody's watching.
But I've never seen Bill do that publicly. I've seen Bill O'Brien do it, to Tom. But I'm saying I've never seen Bill Belichick do that on the sidelines to a player. I can see him doing that behind the scenes being a possibility, but I can't think of a time where he just was going to town on someone
that's
on the sideline.
That's
like
not
that.
His style. Like, he doesn't get outside of himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Coach Belichick doesn't get outside of himself. He'll curse you out with the same face that you guys see on TV. Like,
look, man, you're a B. I really don't like
this.
What are
you doing? I mean, honestly, what the heck was that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to get out of this world. Like, Sean Payton.
There's a kid at Foxborough High that can make that catch right.
Exactly.
Now.
That's exactly what he's going to tell you. But, like, Sean Payton's not that way. Sean Payton's more emotional.
Yeah.
And that's just him.
That's true. That's a good.
That's
point,
just him. And that's his coaching style. And if Russell Wilson was messing up, then get in his butt.
Yeah.
Get in his butt. It's no different than him telling him stop being soft this offseason. Like, stop worrying about all the other stuff. Like, focus on football. That was public. That was before he even started coaching the team.
Strategy.
Yeah. He certainly didn't want to say that that's what he was talking about, though, after the game when he was asked about it. He said it was they were arguing about some call or he was bringing up the call that happened in the game. And then when there was a follow-up question asked, that's when Sean goes, I don't have to tell you what I said to Russ. So that's when
facts.
You knew that probably wasn't
facts,
what
man.
Was being talked
I like
about.
It.
I like it.
That's old.
I mean,
it's an old school coaching staff.
It is old school.
It's an old school coaching staff, and that's what I'm accustomed to. Like this new stuff is, it's different, man.
And maybe
it is different.
You know what? And maybe he thinks that Russ can handle it, where maybe he wouldn't do that with another player. You know,
I don't think he's concerned about it.
Yeah,
I don't think there's so much concern about how you approach guys now and what can I do? Are they going to tank? Are they going to
It's how it should be, honestly.
Yeah,
it's just, there's more attention and there's more cameras on this game with every year that passes. And, you catch more of those things. Some people are self-cognizant of it, and some people, like Sean Payton, aren't.
Facts.
I don't think there's a wrong or right side to the coin, If I'm Sean Payton, I don't care that you're making $38 million this year. Exactly. I'm going to tear you up just as much.
I think there are more coaches now concerned about perception than they are about coaching. The way that the way that players should be coached. They're taking different angles to coaching because of how things might be perceived. Mm-hmm. Sean Payton obviously doesn't care about that.
Well, and
if you're wrong, you're wrong. I'm going to let you know about it in the moment.
That's okay, and I completely agree with you there, but perception in the moment is sometimes when the cameras are on. You don't know if Sean Payton's like that behind closed doors, what kind of relationship they have there too. But it goes back to what Nick was saying in the last question of perception is reality. A lot of times these coaches are hired and fired based off of perception. And that's what the coaching carousel is to a certain extent. The perception drives whether or not they get a job at a high level or a different organization down the line or whether they get to stay with their current organization. So I can see why they're concerned about perception, but also behind closed doors, they could be a completely different person. It could be a completely different situation. But good conversation, though.
Yeah. You got one, another one? Or are we good?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have another one?
I was just going to say, you guys think that the MVP, if it goes down to San Francisco, should be the quarterback or the running back?
McCaffrey, man. I've been screaming McCaffrey for weeks. I don't understand.
George Kittle said that the other day.
Purdy said it too.
Purdy did too.
Purdy said that McCaffrey should be the MVP.
I think it's a no-brainer. It should be McCaffrey.
Yeah.
If it comes down to San Francisco and nobody's
Just to tie it back into Cowboys real quick. Did you guys, in 2016, did you guys think that Dak should have been rookie of the year or Ezekiel Elliott?
Because
I thought it was kind of similar. Like, it could go one
Zeke.
Or way.
I think in the moment back then, it was Zeke for me, but you could have made the case for either.
Yeah. I think both were there, but I probably would have given the edge to Zeke in that regard.
And Dak won it and Zeke won Offensive Player of the Year?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't paying attention back then.
What were you paying attention to in 2016?
I wasn't getting paid for the Cowboys to cover them.
Okay. He was staying steadfast is what
absolutely.
He was doing.
I was doing the business.
Yeah, he was trying to get that thing set up.
He's getting that nice little jacket made. That's what it was.
It's good. I like that.
Did you get one made for me back in 2016?
Yeah. I got you, though.
All right, that does it for us here on Talking Cowboys. Great job, as always, setting up those storylines. Lots of fun conversations around the league and tying it back to the Cowboys as well. When we come back tomorrow, it's time for QB Vision. We're going to take a look at the Cowboys offense versus the Miami defense. Don't sleep on this Miami pass rush. They've got some guys that can get home as well and pressure the quarterback. We'll talk about that in depth tomorrow. For Chris Beam, Isaiah Stanback, John Machota, Nick Harris, I'm Kyle Yeoman saying so long from Talking Cowboys. We'll see you in the morning.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about this, Cowboys? Yeah!